it is customary that when they read the Aseres HaDibros, everyone stands up. And if you're in a place where people are knowledgeable, even though they stand up, there's always some conversation about the fact that the Rambam says not to. The Gemara says that it used to be the custom to have the Aseres HaDibros recited every morning. And then they abolished it. Because of the meaning, the Apikorsim, who said, there aren't 613, there are only 10 commandments. And then the Shulchan Aruch tells us that it's a good thing to say Aseres HaDibros every morning. Nevertheless, it's not done. And until recently, you couldn't find it in a Siddur. And the commentaries explain that there's good reason why. Because if it's in the Siddur, and everybody's saying it, that it's pretty much the same idea as everyone saying it together, which is just what they told us not to do. Why are the Ten Commandments so controversial? Because there are 613? So if there are 613, why are there 10? What happened? What happened at Sinai? Hashem gave him a taste of commandments. You know, there was the sound and light show, the heavens opened. Here are 10. Now Moshe Rabbeinu is going to come up to heaven and he'll get the other 603. So Rashi brings Rav Sadia Gaon, who says that all 613 are included in the 10. Rav Sadia actually wrote a sefer. It's not all that long, but the commentary on it makes it 3 very fat volumes. The 10 really include all 613. Alright. So there really are 613 commandments, but they're included in the 10. And an Apikoros doesn't appreciate that and says, no, there are only 10. But that's not all. The Rambam describes exactly what happened. What was it that the Jewish people heard at the revelation at Sinai? Says Rambam, they heard this unintelligible sound. And it's based on Chazal that Hashem first said all 10. First he said all 10 at once. Then he came back and started saying one at a time. But initially, it was totally unintelligible. The Rambam writes, it was unintelligible. It was all 10 together. But it was unintelligible. So what was it there for? What's the purpose of a revelation? How is Hashem communicating if what he's saying is not intelligible? You mean he tried and they didn't understand it, so he decided he was going to say it one at a time. Hashem misjudged what human beings are capable of hearing or understanding. I mean, he created us, didn't he? Not only that, but if he'd want to change us, he could. If he wanted us to understand it, he would have made us understand it. But we have to hear all 10. All at once. Which means that on a certain level, there's really one commandment. It's just that on that level, we can't really understand it. 10 is about as little as you can get away with. You know, there's a written law and an oral law. That too. If you take the written law literally, you may come up with something like what the Karaites did. We don't know what the written law means without the oral law. In fact, the written law without the oral law is misleading. So why do we have a written law? If ultimately you need the oral law anyway, and without it you don't know anything, so why is there a written law? The real thing is not the Chumash. The real thing is the Shulchan Aruch. The real thing is the Rambam. What is the purpose of the Chumash? No, but the whole oral law is really there. Whether you're doing it through the Gemara and the things that we find difficult to really relate to the words, you'll have commentaries doing it for you. The Netziv does it. Hirsch does it. The Malbim does it. They're out to show you that if you really read carefully, it's there. And then they tell us that the Vilna Gaon went even further. In his last years, all he did is he read the Chumash, and he said, not only is the whole oral law that we know there, but all of the secrets of the Kabbalah are there too. If you really, really, really get to understand the words properly, if you really understand the language, all the secrets of the Kabbalah are there too. So in his last years, all he did was learn Chumash. So there's everything, then there's the written law, and you condense that and you get the Ten Commandments, and you condense that, and you get that noise that the Jews heard at Sinai and couldn't understand. But that's really what it amounts to. You know, we're told that there was a Torah before there was a creation. Before there was a creation doesn't just mean before the world looked like what it looks like today. It means it was there before finiteness was. It was there when all that existed was Hashem the Infinity Himself. As we know it, it's a collection of finite ideas. How could you possibly talk about its existence before creation? When did Hashem create it? When did He write it? If we say it existed before creation, that means before He did anything. So did Hashem write it, or did He not write it? So He didn't write it. So who did? It was always there. 1 second. All that was always there was Hashem Himself, because Hashem is the infinity. So what is the Torah? Who made it up? We have no choice. We've got to say that the Torah and Hashem are really one and the same. No, this isn't what Hashem looks like. But this isn't really what the Torah looks like either. Guys always have the problem at one point or another. It seems like in yeshiva, they tell you about developing a relationship with Hashem, but all they have you do all day is study. And it's a great question. There's something we preach and there's something else we have you do. And the people we respect in Judaism are not people that spend their whole day meditating on their relationship with Hashem, but people that are scholars. Obviously, if you study Torah as some academic exercise, and it wouldn't have made much of a difference if you're studying math or you're studying Gemara, then the question is valid. Do you know what you're studying? You're studying Hashem. Come on. What does Gittin have to do with Hashem? You're studying Hashem. In this finite world, which is made of the light of Hashem that He shone and turned into all of creation. In this finite world, where things are finite and there's an order, and there are human beings, and there's marriage, and there's business, and there are oxen, and today there are cars. This is a finite world where there are things. And we see them as mundane. We see them as secular. And we think about religion as something that is separate from it. We're making a mistake. What do you mean secular? What is the source of secular existence? What is secular stuff made of? What's the stuff that everything is made of? Where did Hashem get the mud that He made man of? What's that made of? It all came from Him. And it's all His kind of stuff. And in this world, it's finite. And there's you and I, we're individuals. We don't see ourselves as pieces of Hashem. Our religion doesn't talk that way. But ultimately we know that all stuff originates with Hashem. All existence does. And you know what Torah is? It's describing to us the place of all existence. That if you take Hashem, and sort of, and don't imagine this, because in our terms, we start thinking of finite stuff. But if you take the Hashem stuff and break it down and form this world as it is, and you want to know how to put it back together again in the right way, you want to know how to put it back together again in a way that it really is the Hashem stuff, here are the instructions. This is what it's all about. And we're pieces of that too. That's what Torah is all about. Ultimately, what it boils down to is the stuff that Hashem is. It's broken down, and in many ways. How do you start seeing it as more than just the finite stuff? Well, you see, it depends on how you view everything. In Parshas Kisiso. Moshe asks Hashem to reveal himself. Hareini noes kvodecha. Reveal yourself. I want to see you. So there's this whole discussion, and it says, well, there's a hole in the rock. You stand there. I'll cover you. You won't see me before, but you'll see me from behind. And the Svarim bring down, it's a Gemara and it's a Zohar and all kinds of things. What did he show him? The kesher of his tefillin shel rosh. Hashem wears tefillin, and he showed him the knot on his head. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu saw. And the good books explain that what did he see? He saw himself. Hashem showed Moshe Rabbeinu that aspect of Hashem that Moshe had attained. What is that? The kesher of the tefillin shel rosh. And the Svarim go on and explain exactly what the kesher of the tefillin shel rosh is. Where exactly is that knot? It's the point where the brain and the spine meet. It's the point where understanding and action meet. Moshe Rabbeinu had attained the level of perfection that was Moshe Rabbeinu in the area of there not being any gap between understanding and behavior. That was the aspect of perfection that Moshe Rabbeinu personified. All his work and growth, it turned him into the kesher of the tefillin shel rosh of Hashem. That concept. Obviously, when you're dealing with Hashem, you don't have something called intellect and something else called behavior. Hashem is all one. The aspect of unity that Moshe Rabbeinu was able to attain, there was unity whereby to Moshe, understanding meant action. Whatever he knew, he was. Whatever he knew, he did. It wasn't a process, have to learn Musar and make sure that I really keep what I know is right. He had attained that level whereby understanding, attitude, behavior, it was all one. What's the moral of the story? With regard to Moshe Rabbeinu, there's a lot to be learned. We understand how far we are from that and what the goal is. We also look back and appreciate that we've come so much closer to it than perhaps secular society believes it. We understand that the process called Yerushalayim is that. The epitome of it is Moshe Eved Hashem. His person, his persona was Eved Hashem. Eved Hashem means his behavior was totally, totally, totally in the possession of his intellect. In the possession of what he knew to be truth. But you know what the moral of the story is to us? That for everybody, there's another way that you see Hashem. And you know, when you see Hashem, you know what that's a measure of? Where you're at. Moshe Rabbeinu could not come back and say, the sum total of Hashem is the kesher of the tefillin shel rosh. He had an understanding of where he stood vis-a-vis Hashem. You know, when you study, we establish that you're studying Hashem. So what if all you see are lost objects and divorce and this one telling the other one to do this for him and oxen goring? When you look at Hashem, that's what you see. If that's all you see, and when you look at Hashem, you're supposed to see just where you're holding with regard to Hashem, it means that basically all your frames of reference are finite and physical. And you have a hard time seeing past that. And then you wonder, am I really studying Hashem? My expectations of Him are different. Are there really oxen up there? Is that what He's made of? And then you start becoming a finer human being. And when you look at an ox, you don't see horns anymore. And you don't see it chewing its cud. You start seeing things that are much more meaningful. It begins with concepts. And it goes deeper and deeper and deeper. I'm making a very strong statement here. And please don't take it as a condemnation. What I seem to be saying is that if you can't see the sublime on the page of the Gemara, then it's because your frames of reference are too finite. I'm not condemning you for that. That is human nature. And it's a process. But the more conscious you are of the process, the easier it is. Your goal is to start seeing Hashem's world in a different light. And then seeing His Torah in a different light. The goal is to be less finite. There's a Ramban in Chumash that if somebody's aspirations to the very end remain finite, that he cannot expect any reward in the world to come. He's going to have to get it here. If he hasn't developed an appreciation for that which isn't finite, then he can't get his reward there. He doesn't appreciate it. Our job in this world is not just to do mitzvahs. It's for our perspectives to be finer. Finer and deeper. And that as one becomes what we call a lamdin, you're not just learning to do a bunch of arithmetic. You're beginning to see things in a finer way. There's akasha. If you do your arithmetic, something doesn't work. And the answer is, what a lamdin does is now, oh, let's try making the calculation the other way. What a lamdin does is he restates the question and says, you know something? It really does make sense. Because things don't mean what they sound like superficially. It means developing a finer understanding. And that the next time you gaze at Hashem and His Torah, you don't see oxen. You see finer ideas, and finer, and more meaningful. And existence is greater depth. We are always making contact with Hashem when we're learning. But if it's not inspiring, it's because we have not gone past the lowest level of finiteness. And the truth of the matter is that there's a whole system going up, and it begins with the finite cases, and it goes further into the laws, and gets finer and becomes principles, to the point that you take the millions of halachas and you turn them into 613 commandments. And then you get them even finer, and someday they become 10. And then, one day, you find yourself staring at Hashem Himself. Because that's what it's all about. But it's a process. At the lower ends of it, maybe you have to remind yourselves. And if you'll ask why others aren't bothered by the question, it's not because they're superior to you, but because they enjoy their learning and are just doing that, and perhaps don't yet have expectations. And if the question bothers you, it's not because you're smaller than them, but because you do have expectations. And that's far more accurate than not having expectations. But let that question get you to start viewing things in a much more subtle way. Seeing the world as less black and white. Seeing finite existence not as being sizes and colors and shapes, but start seeing ideas. And allow those ideas to become more abstract. And become a lamdan. And eventually you'll be able to see more and more of Hashem in halacha, in gemara, in the mitzvahs. And someday you'll be able to stare up there and see just where you're holding. You're going to gaze at Hashem and see something that's your piece of Hashem, and it's going to be awesome. And you'll stop asking the question. Yirtzeh Hashem, we should all get there.